This is Carolyn Cromings, and welcome to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about everything related to contractors, construction, and information to help you run better businesses. Hey guys, welcome back to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we go over all the ways not to get screwed in the construction industry. Because if you work in construction, getting screwed is probably like the norm. And today specifically, I have my resident expert on employment issues. We're going to talk about non-competes, what they are, how they work, if they're going to be around for much longer, and some alternative methods maybe. Good afternoon, Ms. Kelly. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on again.
Again, this is Kelly Stamey. She's an employment attorney with my firm, and we've had her on a couple times to talk about how to pay employees the right way and all of the other things. And today we're talking about this. So let's start with just the basics. What is a non-compete, and what are people trying to do by having people sign them?
Sure. So a non-compete kind of falls under a bigger umbrella under the law called restrictive covenants, which is basically a covenant we all know is a promise to restrict someone from doing something. So a non-compete is, you know, everyone can kind of figure out that, oh, I'm keeping someone from competing against my business. But as I really talk to my clients about what they're trying to do by having someone sign a non-compete, it's less about this person working for a competitor and more about this person taking clients and customers along with them, or even employee rating when they leave. A person can be a salesperson wherever, but you just don't want them taking your clients and your customer base and things like that. So a non-compete technically prohibits someone from working for a competitor. And a lot of times I like to pair it, or as we'll discuss in this podcast, I even prefer a non-solicitation instead. That non-solicit, though, that's what keeps your former employee from taking away a customer, a client, or other employees that you have.
So what people might be actually looking for is a non-solicit agreement.
Exactly that. And for two reasons, because that's really usually when I ask the question, that's the first thing that comes out of my client's mouth. I don't want them stealing my pipeline of money. And then the second thing is they're easier to enforce. Non-competes are incredibly difficult to enforce. But non-solicits, you know, they kind of have the same analysis. But when you kind of go through all of the facts and what the court looks at, a non-solicit is going to be a lot easier to enforce, give you the greater set of protections than a non-compete would be.
And why do you think that is? Why do you think it's easier to enforce a non-solicit?
Sure. So in Texas, there's no real easy way for me to tell you, hey, check these boxes and you've got an enforceable non-compete, because the courts look at all the facts. You know, what level is this person in your company? Are they a CEO or are they a salesman? And what was their job description? And Texas wants people to have the right to work somewhere. So there's three factors the court looks at: length of time, 12 months to 18 months, if you're lucky, is how long a court's going to allow you to do it. Geography. I mean, 50 miles is going to be way too big depending on the employee's level in your company. Typically, it's going to be something closer to 5 to 10 miles. And then scope. So a person who's a salesperson pretty much can only be prevented from being a salesperson at a competing company. It's kind of them going over to a mirror job. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, I have a client hand me a non-compete that's pulled from online or somewhere else, and it says working from a competitor in any capacity. And as soon as I see those three words, in any capacity, I know that we are already at a deficit here. We're looking at something that's going to be non-enforceable. And when that happens, you know, you don't get any money damages. You don't really get anything other than the court looking at your non-compete, editing it like a teacher used to do on your schoolwork, and handing it back to you and saying, hey, look at this. Now you can enforce everything I've just ripped up. And at that point, you've wasted enough money trying to get that from the court. It becomes not worth it. Versus a non-solicit.
And that's all in the non-compete.
Correct.
And the courts don't like those because it restricts somebody's right to work, basically.
Correct. And Texas favors competition, right? You want to keep people. Be better at your job is kind of how Texas looks at it, versus a non-solicit where you say, hey, you can't take any of my employees. It's pretty easy. And you can't take any clients or customers that are mine for up to a year or 18 months after you leave. And that's so easy to determine because there's a list, right? If it's a salesperson, you have a list of clients that were in their portfolio, or everyone has access to your list of clients. Everyone has a definitive list. So it's easy to figure out what that list is and what they shouldn't touch. And typically, that becomes a little bit easier to enforce because it doesn't mean a person can't go work anywhere, right? It just means that that business needs to have a better way to get clients and customers or have customers ready for this employee to service. And that kind of gives them a job, protects your business, and courts, I have seen, favor those a little bit better.
All right, so two things. What about trade secrets? Can that be protected through a non-solicit, like your processes and things like that?
Yeah, it absolutely could be protected. I kind of have a form that I do with my clients that covers confidentiality, trade secrets, and non-solicits. However, we have the Texas Uniform Trade Secrets Act, and in there's already a list of items that qualify as a trade secret. That includes customer lists, that includes pricing lists. And if your employee never signs anything while working for you, those items are already going to be protected under that act if they take it. And it can be a physical taking. I mean, I've had situations where we've hired a forensic computer team to come in and find what was downloaded, what time was it downloaded, how many times were different files opened. So it can be a physical or electronic taking, or it could be a clear memorization type thing. That's a violation. When they then turn that over to their new company and that company uses it. Now we've jumped over to misappropriation of these trade secrets. And you can go after this new company, which, let's be honest, that's where the real money is, right? The company has the thing that's going to foot the bill in the situation. So if your clients or your, excuse me, if your employees haven't signed anything, you're still going to have a level of protection that exists under the trade secret laws in the state of Texas.
Do most states have something that's similar to that?
Yes, most states do, and it's very easy to research and find. And the way you can tell that most states is it's the Texas Uniform Trade Secrets Act. And that word uniform there means that someone over the entire state of Texas kind of wrote this, and then each state was like, oh, that's cool, and adopted it down into their own state law. And then, of course, you have anything that's copyrighted or patented, that kind of arises to a federal level of protection there as well.
Okay, so then my next question on the same point is, what do you think about the long-term viability as non-competes enforceability, just in general?
Yeah, I think they're going out the window. As far as non-competes go in and of themselves, you get the whole spectrum across the United States of what different states allow. 100%, California does not allow them. Texas allows them. Texas has very tricky kind of exceptions to some of the rules, but some states on the East Coast say, well, you could buy a non-compete at the end of someone's employment. So if you have to lay someone off, you can say, hey, here's a $5,000 severance, but you got to sign this non-compete to get it. And that's perfectly legal. It's not in the state of Texas. Other states say if you sign a non-compete, then if you are let go through a layoff, your non-compete is not viable. But if you quit, your non-compete is viable. So you have twists and turns at every level. And I think, kind of because of that fact that it's just not uniform, President Biden actually has put together a task force looking at if there is going to be a federal ban on these non-competes. It's a very common thing for a Democratic president to do. You see more rights come out for individuals versus businesses, and that's a protection to an individual to make those illegal. Nothing's happened yet. Don't actually know if anything's going to happen with it, but I can see and would not be surprised if there's a trend that starts going in that direction.
Okay, so if you were in the state of Texas, or let's just go Texas because I know every state's different, and you wanted to have a successful no compete, what does that agreement look like and when is it signed?
So that agreement would be way more narrow than you would ever be happy with me telling you you're going to have. It's going to have a length of time. I'm going to encourage 12 months. You might could talk me into letting you have one for 18 months. It's going to be essentially an equal job position in another competing company. It's going to have a lot of definitions. It's going to be pretty narrow. It needs to be signed at the start of employment or during continuing employment. It cannot be signed at the end. You can't get them signed and then be like, well, I'm just going to wait 30 days and do a layoff. That's going to get sniffed out really fast. You know, there's no hard and fast rule of how much time there has to be, but you definitely can't have someone turn in a 2 week notice and try to get them to sign one when they're out the door. Can't be something. Prefer at the start of employment. I prefer it obviously as kind of like their little welcome packet when you onboard someone, but that doesn't mean that it's not something that you can add to your employees, you know, right now. And just so that I'm clear, I know for sure in the state of Texas, this doesn't just apply to your employees, it applies to your independent contractors as well. You can do non-competes and non-solicits for your independent contractors. I tend to not like it as much, non-competes, especially for independent contractors, because if anyone wants to go back and listen to our podcast about how to pay your employees, and we talk about the control over an employee, that's a level of control saying where someone can go work next after they stop being an independent contractor with you. So you could kind of shoot yourself in the foot there if you're trying to restrict an independent contractor, but pay them as an independent contractor, you're going to kind of get yourself walking on some thin ice. So it's kind of best that you call, you know, us, an attorney, someone that can go over that with you. You know, we can't be looking at your treatment of employees kind of in a compartmentalized way because something could come around and bite you, you know, on the back end.
So what if you are like in the middle, someone's been employed for you for a year or so, and you want to have them sign a non-compete? What does that look like? What is different about it?
Nothing. It would look exactly the same. It's trickier just on a relationship and personality level, kind of sticking it in someone in the middle of their employment with you because, you know, they're kind of like, why now? What's going on? You know, I've been so loyal. Do you not trust me? And, you know, I tell my clients all the time, you know your employees best. You know your workers the best. You know how you need to package this deal to get them to sign on the dotted line. And honestly, that the word non-compete scares people, but confidentiality and non-solicit doesn't scare people as much, and it's much easier to get those signed versus a non-compete. Because listen, everyone's got to make sure they've got food on the table, and the idea that they're not going to be able to go work somewhere else, you know, may, you know, I've had clients have employees delay, 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 and next thing you know, they've never signed it and they've got a new job and they've left because they got scared. And that really wasn't the point. And so, you know, you have to kind of figure that out as a business owner, what's going to work best for your people. But you are perfectly allowed to do it at any point as long as it's not at the end.
Okay, so and then so if you wanted to do that, even though you don't have to in most states, do a non-solicit, kind of what would be included if you put the non-solicit in with the non-compete, what would be included in there? What things are they not going to be able to take with them specifically, or how would you word it so the employee understood what they were agreeing to?
Right. So I typically say something along the line of during the course of your employment or, you know, relationship, and for 12 months thereafter, the employee may not directly or indirectly solicit employer's customer or client with whom the employee had direct contact or knowledge of. And that is the simplest way to say it, right? And so that means if I'm a salesperson and I have my portfolio or I know who's in the pipeline, I can't take them with me when I leave, directly or indirectly solicit, which means reaching out to them or calling my new boss and saying, hey, I used to work for ABC Painting, or ABC Painting used to be a client where I worked. How about you have Joe, the other salesman, call on them because I have insider knowledge. That is an indirect solicitation. Now, the actual soliciting of it and the client never leaves doesn't harm you as much, but it starts to tip you off that this person may be doing that. It can lead to a cease and desist letter and potentially even a restraining order to stop them from making certain calls, that sort of thing. Another thing that I like to have in those agreements is that you have the right to inform your employee's new boss or new employer that this non-compete, this non-solicit, or this confidentiality agreement exists. Because 9 times out of 10 in smaller businesses, you're just hiring someone and they are not asking the question. You're not trying to see if there's a non-compete out there. You don't know. And if you knew, you may not hire that person. And so it's perfectly acceptable to put that as a term in there as well. And it kind of makes sure everyone's aware of what's going on. And, sometimes that company will say, okay, cool. What's the list of people they can't contact for a year? We'll make sure we don't do it. And we enter into an agreed order in front of a judge. I've had that happen. I've had other times that say, nah, screw you, let's go. And we're in court for 6 weeks in a trial. And it can go any which direction, right? So having this is not the end all be all of protection, but you are going to be off in a much better position. You're going to make that the rare exception to the situation versus it happening kind of all the time.
So while we're on that, so once you put the new employer on notice of this non-compete, non-solicit confidentiality agreement, could they have liability if they knew about it and still took the information and used it?
They could, not really through the non-solicit. You sometimes have to get a little more creative. So they could have liability under the misappropriation of trade secrets, that we talked about earlier. I always pair those together, because, if you're keeping your client list quiet, which you typically always try to do for the most part. Or your pricing list, that's another huge one, especially if you've got a lot of sales and things like that start getting taken, or you're getting underbid and things like that. This company is the one that's doing it. It's very possible that there's liability with the new company. And that's absolutely what you want, right? Like we said, they're the ones with the deeper pockets. And they're the person you're usually more mad at, right? Because they're taking your company, and the reason this ex-employee is able to do what they're doing is only because your competitor is giving them the space to do so.
Absolutely, and they're the ones who are benefiting from it, right? You
Exactly.
know, an employee
Yeah.
can get a job anywhere, but if they went to that particular place, they're getting the benefit of that person's particular knowledge.
Right.
And
Right.
so, question, could you put this in an employee handbook, or does it have to be its own separate document?
It has to be its own separate document. For kind of two reasons. That's just generally the way it goes in the state of Texas, at least, because if someone signs a non-compete and breaches it, we don't file a breach of contract the way you would if your construction contract had been breached, or a project you're on, or whatever it may be. The Texas Non-Compete Act trumps everything else. It governs, it's its own set of rules and laws and things like that. So you already have to have the separate document to sue on. Second, it's got to be tailored per person signing it. And so if you've got someone who's a janitor at your office and someone who's a senior vice president, there's no way that a non-compete in an employee handbook is going to be enforceable for both of them. And the reality is it's going to be enforceable for neither of them. And you're going to be in the same issue. So it does need to be its own separate agreement. Now, it's very easy to be like, okay, here's one for all of your salespeople. Here's one for any senior vice presidents. Here's one for maybe customer service, or receptionist, or kind of people maybe down on the totem pole. So you could categorize them out, but just an employee handbook is not going to be wise.
It needs to be an individual. They need to sign off on it.
Yeah.
Another question. So, What if it's the reverse? What if you're an employee that signed on and signed a non-compete, non-solicit, and now you want to go work for a competitor? What should you do?
Yeah, so you should let the employer know about it. I think
The one you're going to, the one you want to go work for.
correct. So I have a client here and he wants to hire someone and he asks the question and then he forwards over to me that non-compete and we talk about, well, what role are you hiring this person for? Who are they going to be in contact? What office are they going to be working out of? What is the risks or versus the reward of hiring this person, knowing what's on the table? And when all those facts are out on the table, you know two things as an employee. You know that your employer will either back you up if it all goes to hell, or you know that it's not going to be a good fit for you. Or you know that, hey, maybe you take the job, and if something does come up, you better start looking because this employer is not going to have your back. So it kind of protects you. There's nothing really you can do proactively to kind of get your non-compete knocked out. We do it a lot as lawyers when we see a contract and we don't understand, hey, is this enforceable or what does this say? We have a very special procedure that we can file that gets the court to write out an order that basically interprets a contract or explains it out for us or says, yeah, you're a party, but you're not a party to this contract. Non-competes don't have that. You can't take your non-compete and proactively go to a court and say, hey, declare that this is unenforceable. It just unfortunately doesn't work that way. And it's, kind of in your best interest to let your employer know, hey, this is out there. I would be willing to bet quite a bit of money that it's an unenforceable non-compete that you're handing to your new employer. And if they have counsel of any kind, they would know that it's unenforceable. And I've had several people in my life that I know that I've worked in industries where they should have a non-compete that just, flat out refuse to sign it. And in fact, my dad left and started a new company and he got a letter that was reminding him of his obligations. It was just a form letter that was sent out. And he was like, cool, send me the copy of what I signed. Turns out he never signed anything. So he was able to move, but that's could be hard in an industry where you typically move around a lot, whether it's oil and gas or construction or things like that. So now no one's protected, right? My dad's kind of like getting followed around, chased around because the company can't remember if he signed something, but that company's not protected because what if my dad, was trying to take customers and things like that. So they typically, I typically then encourage the non-solicit to my clients. It's a lot easier. You're not really worried if they go work somewhere else. You're not immediately scared. You're only immediately scared if your customers start leaving or you start hearing a buzz. Hey, I heard so-and-so is working somewhere else. That's when, okay, let's do a little bit of investigation here.
Now we can do something potentially. Gotcha. So is there anything else you think people should know about non-competes, non-solicit, this whole topic as a business owner or as an employee?
Yeah, I think it's just to know that regardless of anything else is signed, you do have some level of protection in the court system. Now, and this is something if anyone, we our firm here does these monthly webinars of things, and a theme that I've noticed, whether I've been talking about employment law or I do a lot of residential construction here on the firm, that life is about relationships and how you treat people and how you work with people, and things like that. And there's bad apples everywhere, but if you have a good relationship with your clients and you just have kind of that best customer service or you have an open line of communication and they're not just money to you, they're not just dollar signs, then the worry about someone taking them away from you is going to be lower, right? So there's even some non-legal steps that you can take to reach out, hey, how do you feel about our service? How can we improve? Being more personalized with, maybe even some of like your bigger clients that just make you invaluable in a way that they're not going to leave you. Now, again, recessions happen and sometimes the dollar is all that matters. And so they're going to go with the cheaper person, even if they have really crappy customer service at company B or whatever. But you got to remember that this is an industry, especially the construction industry, right? Like there's a lot of good old boys handshake. Your word means a lot. And that matters here too with your relationship to your employees. I think that these documents are important to have your guys sign. They serve as a reminder of what their obligations are. It's a good thing to hand them again if you have to let them go or they quit or you lay off. Keep it as part of the offboarding. And I've had clients look at a non-compete and I'm like, hey, it's going to be unenforceable. Here's all your risks. And they're like, it doesn't matter. I want it in there anyway. Cool. It's all up to you as well. It's just you need to talk to someone about it because it's a very tricky area in the law. I spent so like 3.5 of my first years out of law school working on these types of cases pretty regularly. I have read almost every single case in the state of Texas that deals with these non-compete cases. It's not a ton. It is a narrow area of the law, but if you don't talk to someone who knows what they're doing, you are going to spend so much money chasing nothing. And that's the biggest danger in these cases. My biggest thing is, hey, you need to come talk to someone so we can figure out what type of documents your employees need to sign to make sure you are as protected as possible. And please, 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 please do not download any forms off the internet and think that when you come to me, I'm going to be able to use it to protect you because I will not be able to. I can try. You can pay me. That is perfectly fine. But I'm also going to tell you, hey, we are a Hail Mary pass with 1 second left in the game right now. That's all we got. That's kind of how I counsel my clients. And at the end of the day, you are a business person. It's up to you the decision you want to make. I will just give you the best legal advice that I can give.
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing is that we have to look at this as a smart business decision. Would it make sense to go after them if it's going to cost me more money than the damage that they're causing? At the end of the day, it's got to be made on what's best for the business and not an emotional decision because you're pissed off, right? I'm pissed off that they left. I'm pissed off that they're contacting my clients, but what effect am I really going to have and how much is it going to cost, right?
Right. And people are going to make these decisions. I had one client be like, why does this keep happening? And I'm like, because people act this way. They do these things. You can have them sign the best ironclad, thing possible, and they're still going to turn around and do something, right? If you're any sort of subcontractor, you've not gotten paid on a project. Even when the GC got the money, you've not gotten paid. You've had a flood, a hurricane, or tornado hit your house, and you've had a contractor take forever to get it done, or you think they're overcharging. It happens, right? But we try to be
Good
here,
thing because that's why how we have jobs,
right?
right?
Yeah,
No,
right. That's why
a
this
little bit,
law,
right?
right?
But here's the thing is that I think what our jobs are is yes, everybody's going to have the disputes and disagreement, but what is the best way out of it based on the financial decisions of the company, right? Not.
Exactly. And that's the thing that the law balances, right? As I talked about earlier, it's a balancing act between the employee having the right to work and have an income in an industry or a job that they are trained to do, right? Because a guy that's an electrician shouldn't have to go find a job at a plumbing company. That doesn't make sense. So that is balanced with the actual business interests of the company. And every company, I don't care if you're putting three plumbing companies in front of me, every company has different business interests that they're trying to protect. Are you a commercial? Are you residential? Are you out in the suburbs? Are you in the city? Are you in a small county? Everyone kind of has a different value system in their company. Doesn't mean one is better than the other, but the courts look at the facts, right? How many mouths does this employee have to feed? Do they really need a job? Are they the only worker? Are they caring for an elderly parent versus you that is complaining about losing 1% or half a percent of all your clients and you got 10 new coming in the pipeline or you're expanding like crazy? The court's going to be like, all right, come on now. Or are you a mom and pop shop where this person was one of two salespeople and they're about to take half of your book of business to the other competitor in town? those things are all going to play in to what is best for you as a company and what you can sign and what I think honestly we can get away with in front of a judge. So that's kind of why calling, having this kind of conversation and analysis with an attorney that knows what they're talking about is how you're going to be best protected on the front end.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate all the great information, Miss Kelly. Thank you
Yes,
for
ma'am,
being here today.
absolutely.
All right, guys. Again, thank you for listening to the Quick Getting Screwed podcast. Guys, check out subcontractorinstitute.com, a bunch of free resources there. Or if you need help on interpreting a non-compete or any other document, reach out to the CrowMeansLawFirm.com. Our number's on there. You can schedule an appointment to talk to us directly. But I hope you're killing it in business out there, guys. Have a great day. Thanks. Thank you for listening to this episode of Quit Getting Screwed. I hope you found it helpful. If you like what you hear, please like us and follow our podcast. If you want further information, you can find us at subcontractorinstitute.com. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. And the book is available on Amazon. Tune in 2 weeks from now for a new episode. Thank you.